We're exploring decentralized finance, the world of alternative financial services here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Ken. Glad you could be here. Decentralized finance, or DeFi as it's called, businesses operating in the cryptocurrency realm that have moved into areas that once belonged to traditional banks, like lending and borrowing. So a user with a crypto wallet can do stuff like trade digital cryptocurrencies, get loans, do other monetary-like things. Do you collect Bitcoin or do you appreciate other cryptocurrencies? What is it about digital cash that worries you or confuses you? 800-642-1234 to join in. Hillary Allen is a law professor at American University Washington College of Law, focusing on financial stability regulation. Hillary, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning. Give us a much fuller picture, if you will, of what DeFi is about, how it fits into the cryptocurrency ecosystem.
Sure. So people are starting to get used to things like Bitcoin, which is a type of crypto. But it's difficult to use Bitcoin for the types of transactions you just mentioned, like lending and things like that, because its price bounces up and down so much. So we're starting to see the evolution of things called stable coins, which are coins that have their value pegged to the US dollar or some other currency. And so the idea is that they will keep a more stable value and that then they can then provide sort of virtual versions of the transactions that you would normally obtain from a bank, like the loans that you mentioned earlier. And that all happens using computer programs that execute themselves, that kind of thing.
Okay. And you recently testified before the U.S. Senate Banking Committee about this, as they explored stable coins. What did you tell them?
A lot of things I'm worried about is what I told them. So the thing about these stable coins is that they purport to be stable. They say, you know, having one of these stable coins is the same as having a U.S. dollar. Except that they're not U.S. dollars. They're not issued by the U.S. government. They're backed by, you know, what they say is a reserve of collateral, but it's sometimes hard to figure out exactly what's in that reserve because we don't have great disclosures. And so it's not clear that these stable coins are actually as stable as they purport to be. And it's also a little worrisome how they're being used. So they're being used in this DeFi system where I said that they're being used to provide sort of simulacrums of regular financial services. But there's a lot of fragilities in that market and a lot of scams that are happening in that market. And I think that should make all of us a little nervous.
So a little bit more, context here. Are these decentralized? There are also these decentralized apps or dApps. How do they fit into the picture of this whole system of DeFi?
Well, the idea about dApps goes back to the point I was talking about, sort of self-executing. This idea that, you know, these transactions can happen without people pushing buttons, without a human being having to sort of process the transaction. And when everything is working well, that seems pretty appealing, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's efficient. Maybe you don't have costs. Maybe you don't have any conflicts of interest, people looking for kickbacks. But I think what it does is it hides some of the conflicts of interest that may migrate from the program to the programmers of the dApps rather than the people executing them. And it also makes this whole system more fragile. We all know that things can go wrong. And when something goes wrong, it's nice to have a human you can call, even if you have to wait on hold for a long time, to say, you know, how do I fix this? Well, when it's a computer program that's executed, who do you call? It's not always clear. And so I think it's a challenge for consumers if things go wrong in this environment.
Hillary Allen with us, professor of law at American University Washington College of Law, specializing in financial stability regulation, explaining DeFi, decentralized finance, and taking your questions, 800-642-1234. Gwen is joining us from Whitewater. Hi, Gwen. What's on your mind about cryptocurrency?
Hi. I'm a high school student about to go into college, and I'm really concerned about how cryptocurrency can affect small businesses and our economy at whole, even if it's just like not necessarily related to the regular economy. And I'm concerned that maybe because so many young people invest in cryptocurrencies instead of investing in small businesses in real life in their local communities, how can that affect the economy?
That's really interesting, Gwen. Hillary, what do you make of that?
Well, I really appreciate the question, Gwen. In fact, it's something I'm so worried about that I wrote a whole book about it called Driverless Finance. So, you know, we've been talking so far about problems for individual consumers using these services, but you've put your finger on a really important issue, which is at what point does all of this get so big that it can blow up and infect the rest of the economy, even for people who've never even, you know, touched a crypto asset themselves. So it gets complicated. There's a lot of chains in which I think this can sort of infect our broader economy. And as I said, I wrote a whole book about it because, you know, envisaging the streams, the interconnections can get complicated, but they are very much there. And it is something we should all be thinking about.
Well, DeFi supporters will tell you this is the way money is democratized, that it will open up basic banking services to everyone. What do you see as potential benefits and downsides to that thinking?
I have to say I'm very skeptical of that whole line of reasoning. The idea that money will ever be and financial transactions will ever occur without any intermediaries getting in there to make money from it just seems unrealistic to me. You know, there's economic reasons why I mentioned earlier, you want someone to call when something goes wrong. So you want an intermediary you can contact. And then there's just human nature, right? If there's money to be made in this system, you can't tell me that intermediaries won't proliferate. So I think we are going to have intermediaries in the system. And so you have to ask yourself, do you want those intermediaries to be ones that we know and we may not love, but at least we have some idea of what they do and they're regulated? Or do you want those intermediaries to be people that are shadowy, that we have no experience with, and that are avoiding a lot of the regulation by operating in a shady cyberspace? I mean, to me, that's an easy question. I think the promise of a completely decentralized finance is illusory.
The Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions put out an advisory warning about DeFi recently, saying that it lacks many protections that you've been talking about offered that, you know, by regulated service providers. What are the traditional banks' position here? What are they seeing in this area?
It's an interesting question, and I don't think there's one single position that the traditional banks are taking. So, you know, JP Morgan, for example, is quite interested in what's happening in the DeFi space and is looking to maybe enter it. So this goes back to my point about decentralized finance not being quite so decentralized. If there's money to be made, even our established intermediaries want to get in on that. So there are banks that want to get into this space. And then I think there are others that see it as competition. But more than anything, I'm sort of seeing interest in exploring the space for themselves and profiting there.
We're discussing a slice of the crypto industry called DeFi, for short, decentralized finance, with American University Law Professor Hillary Allen is here. What would it take for you to regularly use a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin? Do you worry, like Gwen does, what it would mean for our local communities? Would you ever invest in a crypto? Are traditional banks behind the curve on this? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Hillary Allen here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring the future of decentralized financial systems, how it works with cryptocurrencies. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. DeFi Pulse is the leaderboard for decentralized finance. It's a benchmark charting the growth and activities of some decentralized apps or dApps and the collateral for these smart contracts that we haven't talked about, but that's topping $93 billion at the moment. So what questions do you have about what DeFi users can do? Do you think buzz about DeFi is overblown, or is it the leading edge of financial services? 800-642-1234. Hillary Allen is a banking and financial law professor at American University with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's go to, well, Jason in Duluth wanted to, is no longer here with us, but wanted to bring up climate and the effects on our environment. And I was looking at this Columbia study recently, Hillary, just looking at the energy that is involved with digital mining and the implications on climate change. Can you kind of connect the dots there for us?
Sure. So there are many different cryptocurrencies that have many different ways of verifying their transactions. And if they use a way of verifying that's known as proof of work, that's when all this mining's involved. And so essentially, that's just a lot of computer servers running at very high speed, essentially trying to guess a number. And it takes an enormous amount of computing power. And it is very, very environmentally damaging. And so I think we have to be asking ourselves, when people are using this proof of work, when they're doing this mining, what does society actually get that makes up for that environmental damage? And I've yet to hear a convincing answer on that.
Okay, and so the Ethereum is looking to reduce its energy use by, it said, 99.9% this year by transitioning to a system called proof of stake. So that doesn't require computational power, apparently. What's going on there?
That's right. So proof of stake is a way of solving the proof of work problem, environmental impacts that we just talked about. It's generated a lot of bad press for the crypto industry, understandably. And so they're looking at proof of stake as an alternative. So this is sort of another way of trying to verify transactions without requiring trust in one particular institution or node as being the verifier. It makes things more complicated. I mean, so all of this decentralized stuff makes things more complicated. And it's actually a reason why a lot of these crypto services have struggled to scale up. So just in terms of volume, you know, they process nothing like what a Visa or a MasterCard is able of processing in terms of volume of transactions, simply because they go through these complicated verification processes, be proof of work or proof of stake. So the question is, does proof of stake work at scale? And that's something we need to see.
So globally, Bitcoin's power consumption at the moment could be really bad. It could have pretty bad implications for climate change. How do cryptocurrencies then become more sustainable?
They have to shift away from proof of work. I don't see a way in which proof of work is compatible with our very urgent need to respond to climate change.
Looking at regulation, the Financial Action Task Force that makes this anti-money laundering rules for governments around the world, what is its stance on DeFi? Like, who is looking at this?
So Financial Action Task Force is sort of a global body that looks at money laundering. So that kind of work in the United States is primarily carried out by a body called FinCEN, which is our financial intelligence unit. And they're looking at this very closely because there is, not just FinCEN, also OFAC that looks at sanctions, because there is a lot of illegal activity that's being financed with crypto and is exploring the DeFi market for applications there.
Is their work transparent? I mean, how do we know if they're working at very closely? Are there things that the average consumer should know if they want to get into cryptocurrencies?
Yeah. So, I mean, the OFAC and FinCEN do issue reports regularly that talk about the amount of sort of illegal activity happening. But I think for the everyday consumer, you're less concerned about what I'd say is like money laundering and more concerned about being scammed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they've come up with a whole new name for a whole new genre of scams called rug pulls, which are proliferating within the DeFi ecosystem. And it's called a rug pull because it's like having the rug pulled out from underneath you, right? You put your money, usually a stable coin, maybe a Bitcoin, into a DeFi app. and you can't get it out again. Either it's exchanged for worthless tokens, or there's a problem in the computer code that doesn't let you withdraw your money again. And so you're stuck. And the rug has been pulled from underneath you. And that's something that people should be very careful about. I was just going to say, you can't really detect these unless you have a sophisticated knowledge of computer programming, which I certainly don't.
As we were looking through it, all of this complex jargon, we didn't stop at smart contracts. What is the role of smart contracts in this area?
Yeah, we didn't name smart contracts, but we kind of talked about them a little bit. This is the idea of your getting the intermediary out of it, or at least theoretically, by having a computer program that executes itself.
Okay.
Right? So that's all a smart contract is it's a computer, it's not really a contract, it's a computer program that's designed to self-execute instructions about a financial asset without any human pushing the buttons.
In a matter of seconds, though. I mean, this transaction can happen in 15 seconds.
Yeah, and sometimes even less. And so going back to Gwen's comment about how could this impact our society more broadly, when things are going well, fast, efficient, you know, speedy contracting is great. But when you're in a financial meltdown, we need pauses. We need time to reflect. We need to see what needs to be done. We need to think about what the spillover effects could be. And these smart contracts, because of their speed of execution, they get rid of that ability to pause to a large degree. And that's something that really worries me about the rest of the economy suffering if this DeFi really takes over.
Hillary Allen with us, professor of law at American University, Washington College of Law, as we look at decentralized finance, what it means and how it works within the cryptocurrency ecosystem. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Hillary, what does this mean for the person who is banked at a traditional bank and is doing their borrowing and their car note, if you will, all of the traditional ways? You know, they have a couple credit cards in their wallet. Where do you go from here with that average person in the whole monetary system?
Well, I hope that that person can continue going on as they've been going on. Banking itself, traditional banking, certainly isn't perfect. I'd like to see more consumer protections built into there. But hopefully that person can keep on doing just what they've always been doing. And hopefully we can avoid the situation that Gwen identified, where things that happen in crypto would spill over and hurt those people.
Where do you see the need for consumer protections that need to be built into cryptocurrencies as people buy and sell?
The most obvious consumer protection for crypto is disclosure. For example, you know, people often don't even know what's backing the stable coins we talked about earlier. But I don't think disclosure can do all the work, right? Disclosure is already hard for most people to understand financial disclosures. Now, suddenly we're expecting people to understand the computer code of what they're dealing with. I think that's just too heavy a lift. So maybe we need to go beyond disclosure to thinking a little more broadly about whether certain things should just be banned.
And this whole financial system, too, is dependent on energy as we go back to climate change. I mean, it's dependent on electricity to keep these massive computers running. And so that is a risk as well, because what if the energy goes away? What if the lights don't go on? What happens then?
That is definitely always a concern. That's a concern for regular banks as well. And so that's, you know, with climate change, we need to be thinking holistically about all of our financial services, whether they'll be able to continue being provided when the lights go out. And that's why I actually think it's vital that we keep using cash so that we have that alternative for natural disasters and things like that.
That is the first time the word cash has entered this conversation. What is the future of cash? Because we've also seen coin shortages in the pandemic.
Yeah, so it's an interesting one. There's plenty of people who are very interested in going to a cashless society. There are others who object, usually because, you know, there are large portions of our population who have no bank account, really. So that if, you know, if you get rid of cash, you exclude them from the economy. And I think that's a real concern. And then, as I said, there is the idea of, do we need a backstop in case all our electronic transacting goes down? You know, a coin shortage is real. It's not like this is a perfect solution that doesn't involve any logistics of its own. So we do need to start thinking through those issues as well.
Hillary, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Hillary Allen is a professor of law at American University Washington College of Law. She has a new book out analyzing the financial tech industry. It's called Driverless Finance. Ahead this hour, it's the annual report card examining the well-being of children in Wisconsin. We break it down with the director of the State Office of Children's Mental Health. Has your child struggled with social isolation, with stress, cyberbullying, learning loss? What issues are you most concerned about with the kids now? Join in 800-642-1234. News update is next here on the Ideas Network.